Britain has been rocked by scandal upon scandal from its police force. The organisation has repeatedly been found wanting when it comes to stamping out corrupt and criminal behaviour in its ranks. My name is Michael Doherty. I'm a civil liberties campaigner and founder of Justice Now. I seek to bring about fundamental change to the systems of police accountability in the UK. Daniel Morgan was murdered in cold blood in 1987, and nearly three decades on, his killer has still not been brought to justice. His family have fought tirelessly to keep the case alive.
At every stage, you know, the criminal justice system has let us down, you know.
Allegations of police corruption and cover-up began just weeks after Daniel's death, yet five separate investigations have failed to get to the truth.
Our balances and checks in our society, in our oversight of police, for example, should, in theory, spring into action and take up the case on their behalf. But that hasn't happened in this case.
The Metropolitan Police may have turned over a new leaf, but is it too late to catch the killers of Daniel Morgan?
It remains one of the really scandalously unsolved crimes of the last 20 years or so.
On the 10th of March 1987, a private investigator by the name of Daniel Morgan left this South London pub, heading to the car park. But he never reached his car. He was attacked from behind, killed in a savage attack by a man wielding an axe. Daniel's brother, Alistair, describes the assault.
The first blow was kind of to the crown of his head, you know?
And this is with an axe?
Yeah, with an axe, yeah. In fact, he was struck four times, I believe four times with the axe. And then while he was on the ground, the final blow just was straight into his, and it severed the brain stem. It was so violent. The axe was embedded to the haft in his head, you know.
Examinations revealed Daniel's watch had been stolen from his wrist and his trouser pocket ripped. Signs of a robbery, perhaps. But his killer had left a wallet full of cash in his jacket pocket. The whole murder seemed odd, and the motives unclear. It seemed almost certain that the murder was premeditated. But why kill him? His profession may hold some clues. Daniel worked as a private investigator. He found he had a talent for it and started his own company, Southern Investigations.
Daniel didn't run Southern Investigations on his own. He had a business partner by the name of Jonathan Rees, who was with him that night at the Golden Lion pub on the night of his death. The relationship between Daniel and Jonathan Rees had been going downhill prior to his death.
Daniel more and more began to feel that he wanted out, you know. He wanted out of, he didn't want to work anymore with Rees. The partnership had soured. I can remember him saying that, Alistair, he said, I drove 40,000 miles last year. And I said, and he said, and all that guy does is he's standing in the bar with his CID mates. You know? And my brother didn't really have much time for the police. You know, he didn't have a great deal of respect for them. You know, and on one occasion he told me that there was corruption all over the place down in that part of London.
When searching for a motive for this murder, the increasingly sour relationship with his business partner is one line of inquiry. But a second possibility is in comments that Daniel made to various people in the days before his death. Alistair recalls one of these conversations.
On the Sunday before he was murdered, he'd gone to a meeting of the Austin Healey Club. He was a member of a club, this classic car club, you know. He told one of them that he was dealing with some serious police corruption and that he didn't know who to go to in the police that he could trust. And then 2 days later, he was dead. It was quite clear that he was worried about police corruption when he was murdered.
There is evidence to suggest that Daniel Morgan had got himself involved with powerful figures, certainly within the police and perhaps outside. And of course, that could provide a very compelling motive for him to have been silenced, not least of course, given that he allegedly was about to spill the beans on a major corruption story.
The investigation into Daniel's murder began immediately following his death. This was the first investigation. We'll count them as we go. Alistair met with Jonathan Rees the day after his brother's death, and Rees told him that Sid Fillery was one of the officers investigating the murder. Sid knew both Rees and Daniel. He occasionally did some work for Southern Investigations. Sid Fillery was arrested 3 weeks into the investigation, along with two other police officers, Jonathan Rees and Rees's two brother-in-laws, Glenn and Gary Vienne. They were questioned for 1 day and released. All denied having any involvement with Daniel Morgan's murder.
It was at this point we started to see hints of police corruption. The leader of the investigation, Superintendent Campbell, couldn't trust local police at stations like this in Catford. He wanted a totally new investigation by a totally separate police force.
I only found this out a couple of years ago. He went to the right, as far as I understand, to the top of the yard and said, look, I can't do this investigation. There are policemen in this area that I cannot trust. And he wanted it to be handed over from him. He didn't want to, you know, he felt that he couldn't do it.
That the investigation was being compromised?
Yes, yeah.
The inquest into Daniel's murder took place 1 year after his death. The most incredible evidence given to the inquest came from Kevin Lennon, the accountant for Southern Investigations. The accusations he put forward were incendiary.
He told the court that he had been approached on a number of occasions by Jonathan Rees to find somebody to kill Daniel. He says that he had refused on a number of occasions to get involved in it, but that at some point, Rees had approached him and said, look, Kevin, don't worry about this. I've got it sorted. My friends at Catford CID are either going to kill Daniel themselves or they're going to get somebody who's on a charge and have him murder Daniel in return for dropping the charges. And my friend Sid Fillery is going to be on the investigation. He's going to sort the investigation out. He's then going to take early retirement with an enhanced sick pension. And he's going to go into partnership with me. We're going to go into partnership together.
The most remarkable aspect of Kevin Lennon's evidence is that he made the statement in September 1987. But by the time it was made public in April 1988, his predictions had come true. The inquest returned a verdict of unlawful killing, but it was the police's inquiries that really mattered. Alistair expressed his misgivings about the investigation, and it wound up being transferred to Hampshire Police. They were brought in to both investigate the murder and look into any possible police corruption attached to it. This was investigation number two, and it seemed at one point to be making progress.
They charged Jonathan Rees and a man called Paul Goodridge with the murder. And this came out of the blue. They were charged. And then when it came to committal, because they had committal proceedings in those days where you had to go in front of the magistrate's court, the Crown offered no evidence and the case collapsed. So, I mean, at every stage, you know, the criminal justice system has let us down, you know.
After the case against Rees and Goodridge was dropped in 1989, progress ground to a halt for an entire decade. Alistair did not stop campaigning, though. One ally he enlisted in his fight was Lord Smith, who was at the time Alistair's MP.
I got in touch with the Metropolitan Police Commissioner. I got in touch with the Home Secretary. I raised the issue. I said, look, this is so far the investigations have got absolutely nowhere. This is quite simply not acceptable. We've got to reopen all of this. And for the whole of the next 7 or 8 years, I kept on beavering away trying to do this. I lost count of the number of times when a new inquiry was opened or a new person was put onto the case or a new senior police officer came to see me to say they were doing everything they could to look into it.
We have repeatedly invited the Metropolitan Police to put someone up for interview, but they have declined, stating that it would be inappropriate due to the Home Office's ongoing work on the case. More on their inquiries later. We submitted a list of written questions to the Met, but once again they have declined to comment, even on general issues of fighting corruption. Whilst it is understandable that they would not want to jeopardise ongoing inquiries, it is less clear why they would choose not to make any comment, however limited, on a case that clearly has ramifications for the British public. Charles Shoebridge is a former police officer, and his views on the levels of corruption going on changed dramatically as he moved up the career ladder in the Metropolitan Police.
When I first joined the police, every police officer in Britain has to do at least 2 years what's called walking the beat, dealing with everyday 999 emergency call incidents. I would tell my friends at that time who thought that the police were corrupt, I'd say, no, it's not the case. However, then I became a counterterrorism intelligence officer working from Scotland Yard.
In this role, Charles' expertise would occasionally be deployed in investigating corruption within the police. This altered his view considerably.
Without, as I feel I'm unable to, going into specific examples, that was a real eye-opener. And you then did see that, particularly against some organised groups within the police, such as, for example, some of the region, or one in particular of the regional crime squads, within those organisations, there was corruption. And that corruption could involve violence, it could involve drug dealing, things that normally, if it was ordinary members of the public, would be regarded as quite serious offences. And yet investigations that were mounted against those people seemed to always, shall we say, reach a dead end.